Shalom, this is Yair Davidi speaking to you from New Bambi. New Bambi, Brit Am Broadcasting Israel. Speaking to you on behalf of Brit Am Movement of the Lost Ten Tribes of Israel. We are located in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Jerusalem is the capital of the state of Israel. It is also the future capital of the whole world and the future capital of the 12 tribes of Israel when the 10 tribes will be reconciled and reunited with Judah. In ancient times there were 12 tribes of Israel. 12 tribes of Israel split into two separate kingdoms, kingdom of Judah in the north, the kingdom of Israel in the north, the kingdom of Judah in the south. The kingdom of Judah comprised the tribes of Judah, Benjamin, and Levi. From their descendants emerged the basic core, the central body, the foundations of the present-day Jewish people. And from the northern kingdom, who were the majority, who comprised 10 tribes, emerged Western peoples such as the Anglo-Saxons, the Celts, the Irish, the Scottish peoples in Northern Europe, the Dutch, Scandinavians, part of the French, Swiss, and so on. Details may be found on our website, britam.org. Britam, BRITAM.org. Britam.org. And our organization has shown and proven that the lost tribes, the descendants of the lost 10 tribes, are to be concentrated amongst Western peoples. That is what our organization, Britam, works for. That is what we endeavor to do, to inform people of this truth and to prove it through research and propagating the information, spreading the information, informing people. In addition to this, we also work towards increasing, intensifying, and enhancing scriptural knowledge, awareness of the Bible. This is a public service which we believe is for the good of everyone, including ourselves, but also for everyone else. And as part of this ongoing project of ours, we are now studying the second book of Kings, chapter 3. Second book of Kings, chapter 3, speaks of Jehoshaphat of Judah and Jehoram of Israel as allies in the war against Moab. Jehoram, the son of Ahab in English, as in English transliteration, Ahab. He had been king of Israel. He had been followed. When he died, he'd been followed by Jehoahaz or Ahaziah, who died after about 2 years. He died without children, and he was succeeded by his brother, Jehoram. And our narrative continues from the succession of Jehoram of Israel as king over Israel. As it says in 2 Kings 3:1, now Jehoram the son of Ahab became king over Israel at Samaria. Samaria in the Hebrew is called Shomron. This was in the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and he reigned 12 years. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord, but not like his father and his mother, for he put away the sacred pillar of Baal his father had made. So, Jehoram was a little bit better than his father Ahab had been, but he wasn't up to standard. He didn't reach the mark. He wasn't as good as he could have been or as he should have been. Nevertheless, he was an improvement. But as we are told in 2 Kings 3:3, nevertheless he persisted in the sins of Jehoram, the son of Nebat, who had made Israel sin. He did not depart from them. The sin of Jehoram, who was the first king of the independent state of Israel after this kingdom had split apart from Judah, after the 10 tribes had split apart and set up their own kingdom, their first king was Jeroboam. Jeroboam had erected 2 golden bull calves, 2 statues of gold, made out of gold, of bulls, of young bulls. One had been placed in Bethel, and the other one in Dan. and he had ordered the people to worship these gods, and that these idols would were in the eyes of the people meant to represent the God of Israel, and pilgrimages were to be made unto them, and offerings given up unto them in place of the service in Jerusalem. So that was the sin of Jeroboam, and Jehoram continued it. We are told in 2 Kings 3:4, and then Mesha, king of Moab, was a sheep-built breeder. He bred sheep and regularly paid the king of Israel 100,000 lambs and the wool of 100,000 rams. The word translated as lambs in Hebrew is karim, meaning literally fattened sheep, fat sheep. This was a very valuable meat source of meat and mutton to get 100,000 of these fattened sheep would be given up as taxation to the king of Israel, in addition to the wool from 100,000 rams. And this must have been a significant portion of the income of the kingdom of Israel, or at least a not insignificant portion of it. And it would have been a very valuable source of funds for the Israelites, and when the Moabites rebelled against Israel, they would have lost it. The Hebrew word for which has been translated as "and he regularly paid" is "beheshiv." Literally, he would repay the king. In other words, the king of Moab owed this money to Israel. He owed it to them, and it could be that by virtue of Israelite enterprises and Israelite investments, the whole program of raising this sheep had been made it possible in the first place. Also, the Moabites in the past had they attacked Israel and had raided the Israelites, and they were obligated to make recompense, to give some type of reparation for the damage they had done to Israelites. And this taxation of the sheep, of the fattened mutton and the wool, was how the reparations were being made. And the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel. And so the king Jehoram got together all his men, as we are told in 2 Kings 3:6, and then he sent to Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and saying, "The king of Moab has rebelled against me. Will you go with me to fight against Moab?" And Jehoshaphat replied, "I will go up. I am as you are, my people as your people, my horses as your horses." Then we find in a parallel section to the biblical book of 2 Kings, we find in 2 Chronicles, we find another account of something which happened a little bit earlier, somewhat a few years beforehand. We find that the Moabites, together with the Aramites and the Ammonites, had attacked Judah. You will remember in 2 Kings chapter 1 how Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, and Ahab, the king of Israel, had gone to war against Aram. Aram in Hebrew is the name in Hebrew. Aram is translated into English as Syria. Actually, it wasn't necessarily the modern country of Syria, but it included a part of it, and also areas more to the north and to the east. In all events, the Israelites under Ahab and under Jehoshaphat of Judah had gone to war against Aram, and they had been defeated. Consequently, the Aramites continued the war, and they went to attack Judah, together with Ammon, and also offshoots of the Ammonites, a different section of the Ammonites, offshoots, a portion of the Edomites, and Moab, and all of these countries had attacked Judah. And we are told in two Chronicles how Jehoshaphat led the people in prayer, in repentance, supplication before the Almighty. And subsequently the Edomites quarreled with the Ammonites and the Moabites, They started fighting against each other and they killed each other, and all Judah had to do was to gather up the booty and take care of the dead bodies. And this had diverted attention from Judah and saved Judah from conquest and from horrible retribution that the Ammonites, the Moabites and Aramites had planned to take against Judah. At all events, Judah had an interest of its own to further subdue Moab and to remove the menace of Moab to itself. So Jehoshaphat was quite willing to go into alliance with Jehoram of Israel, especially since Jehoram of Israel was in effect his brother-in-law. Jehoshaphat was married to the daughter of Ahab, and Jehoram was the son of Ahab, the brother of the wife of Jehoshaphat. So there were family connections. And Jehoshaphat also was a religious Jew, a patriotic Israelite, and he identified with the Israelites. Their interests were his interests. We find this expression, this sentiment, repeated every now and again elsewhere in the scripture, that the Israelites, despite the fact that they had been split and divided into two different sections, they still identified with each other in many cases and worked together against their enemies. So Jehoshaphat agreed to enter into alliance with Jehoram and to fight against Moab, to help him to subdue Moab. And Jehoshaphat also induced the king of Edom to join them. Edom at this stage was to some degree subservient to him. Edom was subservient to Judah. So we have the three kings: the king of Israel, Jehoram; the king of Judah, Jehoshaphat; and the king of Edom. And all these three kings were going to war against the kingdom of Moab. And they decided to go up through the wilderness of Edom. And one of the reasons why they went attack via Edom was to make sure that the Edomites would participate with them in this war. Edom was subservient to Judah, but was not wholly under its authority, and by making the attack from Edomite territory, they were ensuring that the Edomites would be on their side and fight alongside them. So they set off into the wilderness, and apparently they got lost, and for 7 days they were wandering around in the desert, and there was no water, and things were quite desperate. The king of Israel said, "Alas, for the Lord has called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab." Jehoram of Israel, he did not deny the Almighty, but he thought the Almighty was against him. He had his own outlook on life. He believed in God, he believed in the God of Israel, but for some reason or another, he thought the God of Israel did not show him favor, and there was no point in worshipping properly, because this would be unrequited. Jehoshaphat said that we should look for a prophet of God, of the Almighty. And so they were told that there was a prophet there. One of the servants of the king of Israel answered and said, "Elisha the son of Shaphat is here. Elisha who poured water in the hands of Elisha." Elisha, in Hebrew Eliyahu, was a prophet. We have spoken about Elisha in previous lessons. And Elisha was his Talmud, his disciple. And Elisha had succeeded, he had taken the place of Elijah. So Jehoshaphat had heard of Elisha, and he said, "Let's go and ask him what's going on." And so Jehoshaphat and Jehoram and the king of Edom, they went down to speak to Elisha. And Elisha said to the king of Israel, "What have I to do with you? Go to the prophets of your father and the prophets of your mother." In 2 Kings 3:13, we find this conversation. King of Israel said to him, "No, for the Lord has called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab." And Elisha said, "No. As the Lord of hosts lives, before whom I stand, if it was not for the presence of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, I will not look at you nor see you. But now bring me a musician. And it happened when the musician played that the hand of the Lord came upon him. Elisha used music to induce the spirit of prophecy. In order to be able to prophesy, he asked that the musician should come unto him. The musician should play his music. And Elisha would contemplate and pray, and he would be enabled to give them an answer through prophecy. And we find elsewhere in the Bible that musical instruments are used in this manner, as used as a means to alter the spiritual orientation of people who have trained themselves to be prophets, and to arouse their spiritual inclinations and their emotions and their soul consciousness, as if to say, to enable them to prophesy. 1 Samuel 10:7 speaks of Saul, before he became king, being told that he would go off, and on the way he would meet a group of prophets, and they would be carrying a stringed instrument, a tambourine, a flute and a harp, and that they would be prophesying. So we see here that this use of music as a means, as an impertinence, as an adjunct to prophecy was known. That they used to use musical instruments, play musical instruments, or have musical instruments played before them. And this would elevate their spiritual consciousness and enable those who had trained themselves to prophesy to do so. And Elisha did this, and he was unable to prophesy, and he told them, as we see in 2 Kings 3:16, he says that this valley, it's translated as a valley in Hebrew, Nahal, actually meaning a dry riverbed, is full of ditches, and it will be filled with water. And you shall see it suddenly filled up with water, but you shall not see rain or wind, and the water will come as if to say from nowhere. But this is a phenomenon that is known in desert regions. It happens that you have desert regions and everything is dried up. And in some way, where off in the distance, in the hills, in the adjoining mountains, there might be rainfall, but you won't see it, you won't know about it. But there is, in some distance away in the hills, the rain will fall, and the water coming down from the hills will fill up the wadis, so it will fill up the riverbeds, and this is what happened. And they were told that the riverbed would be filled with water, and that also the Moabites would be delivered into their hands, and that they would subsequently attack all the fortified cities and cut down all the trees and close up all the sources of water and ruin all the land. And so it happened in the morning. Suddenly water came out of Edom, from the region of Edom, and filled up the land. There was water everywhere. And so their water needs were satisfied. In the meantime, the Moabites had heard that the kings of Israel had come up to fight against them, and all of their arm-bearing warriors, all of their warriors, their able men, had come out to fight against the kings of Judah, of Israel, and of Edom, when they stood on the border. Suddenly they saw the whole plain, the whole riverbed, the whole river plain, as if to say, before them, filled up with water, and this was in the morning, and because of the sun reflecting on the water in the desert, it looked red. And they supposed that the kings of Judah and of Israel and of Edom had quarrelled with each other, and they had been killing each other, and this had caused the blood to flow in the water, and such occurrences did happen. We know elsewhere, we know that the Moabites themselves had experiences. They had gone together with Aram and Edom and other Ammonites and other peoples to attack Judah. And on the way, they had fallen out with each other and killed each other, wiped each other out. And the Judah had just come along and taken up taken care of the remnants and taken booty from what was left from the dead body from the dead bodies. So the Moabites were now assuming that what had happened to them was now happening to the people coming against them, and that these people, Judah, Israel, and Edom, had killed each had wiped each other out. And probably their camp was empty, or with very few people left there, and their camp would have been empty, and there would have been a lot of spoils, a lot of valuable weapons, of livestock, garments, a lot of valuables that could be had from the in the camps of the Israelites and their allies, who had just slaughtered each other and wiped each other out. So they went running up to the camps, and the Israelites were in the camps, and they saw met the Moabites coming up, and they killed them. And they chased after them, and they killed the Moabites, and they destroyed the cities, and each man threw a stone on every good piece of land, and as had been prophesied. And they closed up all the sources of water, and they came to the city of Kir Hareset. They brought catapults around it to bombard it, to knock it down. In the meantime, the king of Moab saw that he wasn't not able to resist the onslaught of the Israelites, and he took with him 700 men with swords, and they endeavored to break through to the king of Edom. In other words, to separate the allies, each one from the other, but they were not successful. So then the king of Moab, he took his eldest son, and he offered him up as a burnt offering upon the wall. And there was great indignation against Israel, so they departed from him and returned to their own land. And so the Israelites and the Edomites left the area. That is how it reads in according to a simple message. According to the simple meaning, the simple straightforward meaning reads as we have read it. Alternate interpretations say the king of Moab actually offered up the son of the king of Edom, who had fallen into captivity. But we can't say. There's difference of opinions exactly what happened. This is the end of the subject. This is all the Bible tells us. We know that from Egyptian illustrations of Canaanite cities or Philistine cities, that when the Egyptians or other foreign peoples would besiege these cities, then it was customary to go up and to pray upon the wall. People of the cities would go up to the wall and pray there, and they would also throw their children over the walls as sacrifices, as the placatory offerings, in order to save themselves. And so this may have been what the king of Moab had done. And this reminded the Almighty that the Israelites were also in the habit of acting in this way. And whatever the situation was, whatever it meant, the siege was broken off, and the Edomites and the Israelites and the king and the people from Judah all returned to their own kingdom. So that is our chapter, 2 Kings chapter 3. That is what we are told about in this chapter. We will continue our study of the Bible. We will see what happened after these events. This is Yair Davidi from New Bambi, Britain Broadcasting Israel. Thank you very much. May Hashem, the God of Israel, be with all of you and with all of us. Thank you.